Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Story 1. I work nights in the locked unit of a nursing home, and if you've ever been in one of those wings, you know how unsettling it can get. This section of the building is meant for residents with the most difficult conditions: dementia, severe behavioral issues, or serious mental illness. Because of safety concerns, once you're inside, the heavy door shuts and locks behind you, leaving you with a long, dim hallway that feels like it goes on forever. Being isolated in that place, especially when most of the building is asleep, creates this oppressive silence that gets under your skin. You can almost feel the weight of the darkness pressing down. And when something strange happens there, and believe me, it does, it's enough to make even the most skeptical person second-guess themselves. I've had a handful of experiences in that wing that I can't explain. And when you add them up, they all seem to point towards something or someone that never really left. The first time I realized just how odd that place could get was when I was making my rounds one night. The hallway ends in a dead stop. No windows, no other exits, just walls. From that empty end, clear as day, I heard a man's voice calling out. It wasn't just a sound in the distance. It was sharp, as if someone wanted my attention, almost like an impatient shout. But there weren't any male residents in that hall, and every door was closed with the patients asleep. No televisions, no radios, nothing that could explain it. Later, when I recounted what had happened to a colleague, their reaction was strangely knowing. I learned that even before my time there, people occasionally heard shouts echoing from that wing, often with no one visible at the doorway asking for help. They described his voice, and it matched exactly what I'd heard echoing from that empty hallway. That was the moment I realized that in that unit, the walls held on to more than just memories. Not long after, another resident passed away. She had been a difficult woman, always scolding people, correcting them, telling others to be quiet or speak up. She was bossy in life, and in some ways it felt like her personality stuck around even after she was gone. A few nights after she passed away, I was working my usual shift at the facility. While standing quietly outside her old room, an abrupt and unmistakable shushing sound startled me. So close it felt as if someone stood at my shoulder. The noise was identical to the way she used to hush the residents, but when I glanced around, there was no one else nearby. Every patient was asleep. The silence that followed was so heavy, I remember almost hearing my own heartbeat. Then there was the incident with one of the shared rooms. A woman was moved in with another resident, and the two of them didn't exactly get along. The original occupant could be aggressive at times, lashing out if someone touched her food or invaded her space. When her new roommate died not long after moving in, something changed in her completely. Before, she had always wanted to stay in her room, even resisting when we tried to bring her out. But after the death, she became terrified of being inside at night. She would fight sleep, beg us to leave the lights on, and try to find excuses to stay in the hallway or common areas. I'll never forget the night she tried to leave her room without her wheelchair, practically dragging herself into the hallway, shaking and gasping for air, desperate not to go back in. When I tried to help her, she resisted with a kind of primal fear that didn't feel like confusion. It felt like survival. Her eyes showed pure panic, and it was unlike anything I'd ever seen in her before. That went on for weeks until she was finally moved to a different room, and just like that, the terror stopped. People joked that her former roommate was getting the last word, but deep down, I think all of us wondered if that wasn't too far from the truth. Of course, in nursing homes, we all get used to strange things like call bells going off in empty rooms, even the kind where you have to physically pull a cord to activate it. You can chalk those up to faulty wiring if you want, but it's a lot harder to ignore when it keeps happening in locked rooms that no one has been in for days. You learn not to dismiss it, even if you tell yourself there must be a reasonable explanation. But the part that unnerves me the most isn't the voices or the noises. It's something else entirely. I have a resident at the far end of the hall, a Greek woman who doesn't speak any English. Some nights, she'll suddenly start talking loudly, her voice carrying all the way down the corridor. It sounds like a conversation, not just incoherent rambling. When I go to check on her, she'll go completely silent and pretend to be asleep. The second I walk away, she starts again. Then without fail, another resident will begin talking in her room, then another across the hall. It happens in sequence as if something or someone is making rounds, visiting them one by one, and they're responding to it. The most unsettling part is that they all mention the same thing without knowing about each other's experiences. They'll whisper about that man, saying he was in their room, that he stood in the corner, that he told them something. They describe him as if he's real, present, standing among us when the hall is supposedly empty. I don't know what to make of it. Maybe skeptics would say it's all a coincidence, that dementia makes people see things that aren't there. But the pattern, the consistency, and the way the fear lingers in the residents' eyes, those things stay with me. And when I'm standing in that hallway alone, with the silence pressing in, I can't shake the feeling that someone else is there too. Story 2. I used to work at Kohl's for about 2 years, and honestly, nothing about the job was remarkable, except for one night I still can't shake. It was during the lead-up to Christmas, which, if you've ever worked retail, you know is absolute chaos. The store would get an overwhelming amount of new merchandise, so to keep up with the holiday rush, management usually scheduled a team of about a dozen people to stay overnight and stock shelves in one go. It wasn't mandatory, but I figured the overtime would help cover my holiday shopping, so I volunteered. At the time, I thought it would be just another long, tiring shift. I didn't realize it would end up being the last overnight I'd ever work. We were wrapping up around 2:30 in the morning. The store lights were dimmer than usual. Only the stock room and certain aisles had full lighting, so the place had that eerie, hollow vibe you get in big empty buildings at night. I was working in the bedding section, which in my store was tucked near the back corner, right beside the stockroom. I'd been cramming oversized comforters into shelves that never seemed big enough for them, grumbling to myself about how messy it looked, no matter how hard I tried. A few aisles over, there was an end cap stacked with picture frames that were on clearance. No one else was nearby, and the place was almost unnervingly quiet. Just the distant hum of conveyor belts and the occasional squeak of a cartwheel echoing through the store. As I stepped back to judge my lousy attempt at organizing, I heard a sharp crack that jolted me out of my daze. One of the frames from the clearance section had tipped forward and smashed onto the floor. The sound of glass shattering was unmistakable in the silence. I froze for a second, staring, There was no one around. I hadn't even been close enough to brush the shelf accidentally. Nothing had shaken or shifted. It just fell. I told myself it was probably unbalanced, that maybe I'd walked too hard on the tiled floor, but deep down the hairs on my arms were standing up. Still, I was exhausted and more annoyed than anything else. I sighed, figured I'd better clean it up before someone else cut themselves, and went to grab a broom and dustpan from the housekeeping closet. The thing is, the closet was all the way in the very back of the stockroom. To get there, I had to pass under the conveyor belt system, a suspended track near the ceiling where clothes, wrapped neatly in plastic, would travel around so the stockroom wouldn't overflow. It always gave me weird vibes because the plastic bags rustled when the air moved, and the overhead track groaned occasionally, like the whole system was straining. As I turned the corner toward the closet, something made me stop dead in my tracks. Hanging above me was a single bag of women's clothes, swaying back and forth. And I don't mean a little sway like it had just been bumped. It was swinging wildly, creaking against the metal rail, making this rhythmic thump as the hanger strained at its hook. The sound was sharp in the stillness. Every other bag around it hung perfectly still, not even trembling. My first thought was maybe someone had just sent it through the system, but the conveyors were loud when they ran. I hadn't heard anything. No motor, no chain, nothing. Just this one bag, moving like someone had shoved it hard. The longer I stood there, the worse it felt. The stockroom seemed to close in on me. I couldn't shake the image of someone or something up there, unseen, giving it a push. I forced myself to move, grabbed the broom as quickly as I could, and practically jogged back toward the bedding. My heart was pounding harder than it should have been for something so small. But when I got back to the aisle where the frame had broken, I froze all over again. The floor was spotless. There was no glass, no shards, not even a frame lying there. It was gone. I actually walked up and down the aisle in disbelief, scanning the tiles. I even checked the trash bins nearby, wondering if maybe someone had beaten me to it and cleaned up. But when I asked the other employees later, none of them admitted to doing it. And here's the part that really sticks with me.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Me. When that frame had hit the ground, it had shattered loudly, unmistakably. There's no way I imagined it. There's no way it could have just disappeared. At that point, I didn't want to linger in that section anymore. The rest of the night, I kept catching myself glancing at the conveyor belt or the shelves, waiting for something else to move on its own. Every small noise set me on edge. I didn't say anything to the others because I didn't want to sound paranoid, but I kept feeling like the building wasn't empty, like something was quietly watching us fumble around in the dark. When the shift finally ended and I stepped out into the early morning air, I told myself I was being ridiculous. Maybe the frame had been unstable. Maybe the bag of clothes had been pushed earlier and just kept moving somehow. Maybe another worker cleaned up the mess and just didn't mention it. But deep down, none of it sat right with me. The memory of that swinging bag and the sound of glass breaking still makes my stomach tighten whenever I think about it. I never volunteered for another overnight after that. Even during regular shifts, I found myself hurrying through the stockroom whenever I had to pass under the conveyor system. Rationally, I know there's probably an explanation, but in the back of my mind, I can't help but wonder if the store wasn't as empty as we thought that night. Story 3. I used to work the night shift at an old psychiatric hospital, and even though I've never been the type to buy into ghost stories or the supernatural, There's one night that still makes me uneasy whenever I think back on it. This place had been standing for decades, and it carried that heavy institutional atmosphere you can't quite shake. The kind where the hallways always smell faintly of bleach, no matter how long ago they were cleaned, and where the silence at night feels unnaturally thick, as if the walls are holding their breath. On that particular night, I had been assigned to one of the quieter units, but was asked halfway through my shift to move up to the detox floor because they were short-staffed. The detox wing was always a little more unpredictable. Patients would come in agitated, disoriented, sometimes violent, and someone on staff was required to do room checks every 15 minutes. The rule was simple. You walk by, step in if needed, and make sure everyone is breathing and not in any kind of distress. It was tedious but necessary, especially since medical complications could escalate quickly. When I got to the unit, I hadn't yet memorized which rooms were occupied. To be safe, I decided to check them all, one by one. Most of the rooms were dim, some with a patient curled up beneath thin hospital blankets. Others entirely empty, with just the hum of fluorescent lighting overhead. Everything was normal enough at first, but then I came to one room that stood out. The main bedroom lights were off, leaving it shadowy, but I could see a faint glow leaking from the bathroom. The bathroom door was cracked just slightly, and the strip of light spilling out onto the floor gave the impression that someone was in there. I hesitated for a second, thinking maybe one of the patients had gotten up and forgotten to close it all the way. The policy was clear. You had to check. I knocked gently on the door frame before reaching out and wrapping my hand around the knob. Just as I began to turn it, something pulled back hard from the other side. The door didn't just resist. It slammed shut with a violent force, the sound echoing down the hall. For a split second, my brain scrambled for an explanation. Maybe a patient was inside? Maybe they panicked at the sound of me outside the door. That had to be it, right? Before I could even process it, I heard a pounding from inside the bathroom. The sound was sharp, rhythmic, like fists hammering against the tiled walls. It wasn't the muffled shuffle of someone stumbling around. It was deliberate, almost aggressive, each thud reverberating in my chest. My instincts screamed that someone was in there and in trouble, so I pushed the door open without hesitation. The bathroom was completely empty. The light was buzzing faintly overhead, illuminating the space in that cold, clinical way only hospitals manage. The toilet lid was down, the sink bone dry, the mirror smudged but unremarkable. There was nowhere for anyone to hide, nowhere someone could have slipped out in the split second it took me to open the door. I stood there for longer than I care to admit, staring at the walls as if expecting to find fresh dents or cracks where the pounding had come from, but everything was untouched. I told myself it had to be my imagination, maybe a trick of the acoustics in that old building. Hospitals are full of strange noises, pipes clanging, air vents rattling, even the wind hitting just the right way against the windows. But as I stood there trying to convince myself of this, I couldn't shake the overwhelming sensation that I wasn't alone in that bathroom. It was the same suffocating heaviness I'd felt in the hallways before, only concentrated, pressing down on me until I finally backed out and let the door swing shut again. Although I've spent years working in high-pressure environments where it's easy for the mind to play tricks on you, I remain unconvinced by superstitions or tales of ghosts. My experiences have been my own, shaped more by stressful circumstances than by the supernatural. It's entirely possible that what I heard was some combination of faulty plumbing and nerves, exaggerated by the fact that I was alone in a dim hallway past midnight. That's the explanation I try to stick with. But every time I think back to the way that door was yanked out of my hand, or the way those fists pounded so furiously on the walls, I feel that same chill crawl up my spine. There are plenty of places in that hospital I can walk through without a second thought, but that floor, that room, I avoid them whenever possible, because even though I don't believe in the supernatural, I can't shake the memory of that night. And if you ask me, no matter how rational I try to be, there's something about that bathroom that just isn't right. Story 4. When I was a kid, I never liked the dark. Even now as an adult, I sleep with at least a lamp on because of things I experienced growing up that I could never fully explain. Back then, my bedroom light stayed on every night, and my door was always open just enough so I could see down the hallway. The hallway itself was dark, long, and quiet. From where I slept, I had a perfect line of sight to my brother's door across the hall and the bathroom just next to it. Most nights, nothing unusual happened, and the glow of my light spilling into the hallway gave me some comfort. But one night in particular has stuck with me for years. It's the one memory I can't shake, no matter how many times I try to rationalize it. I remember lying in bed, staring at the ceiling, not quite asleep. The house was still, the kind of silence where even the faint creaks of wood settling sounded sharp. My eyes drifted toward the hallway, and that's when I saw it, a shadow moving from my brother's room into the bathroom. The figure looked just like a person, solid and purposeful, not one of those tricks of the eye you sometimes get in dim light. My body locked up immediately. I couldn't scream, couldn't move, couldn't even breathe right. It was as if the fear itself had glued me to the bed. In that moment of frozen terror, another sound broke through. The rhythmic thumping of my brother bouncing on his mattress. He had this strange habit ever since we were kids, something like rocking himself to sleep, and sometimes his head would knock against the wall we shared. It was a familiar noise, something that usually annoyed me when I was trying to sleep. But that night it was strangely comforting. If he was in his room making those noises, then the shadow I had just seen walking from his door into the bathroom had to be him. It made sense, and for a second, I could almost convince myself that it was the case. But the comfort didn't last. The sound of his mattress spring squeaking, the dull thuds against the wall. They continued in his room even as I kept staring at the bathroom door, waiting for him to come out. Seconds stretched into what felt like forever. My chest tightened, the way it does when something doesn't add up and your brain starts scrambling to make sense of it. I knew what I had seen. I knew I had watched something leave his room. Yet at the same time, I was still hearing him moving around inside. That's when it happened. My brother stepped out of the bathroom, not from his bedroom like I thought, not from behind me, but straight from the bathroom I had seen the shadow enter. He stood in my doorway, looking at me with this confused expression, and asked why I had been in his room. My blood ran cold. If he had just walked out of the bathroom, then who or what had been making those noises in his room? The banging against the wall had been so clear, so steady, there was no mistaking it. I hadn't imagined it, but now he was standing right there, clearly not inside his room, and yet the sound stopped the moment he appeared. I didn't answer him. I couldn't. My mind was still reeling, trying to process the impossibility of what had just happened. He looked at me for a moment, then shrugged it off and went back into his room. I stayed frozen in bed, staring at the hallway long after the lights in his room went out, too scared to even close my eyes. The next morning I asked him about it. I told him I had heard him bouncing on his bed, hitting the wall, the usual restless stuff he did in his sleep. He gave me this blank look, swore he hadn't been doing anything like that. In fact, he didn't even remember getting up and walking to the bathroom in the middle of the night. He brushed it off, said maybe I was dreaming, maybe I was just imagining things. But I knew I wasn't. I had been wide awake. The noises were too real. The timing was too perfect. Something was in that room when my brother wasn't. And the worst part is, I'll never know what. I've told this story a few times over the years, and the reactions are always the same. Some people insist it must have been sleep paralysis, that I hallucinated the shadow while half asleep. Others say I was probably just confused about the timing of when my brother got up. But I remember every second of that night clearly, down to the pounding in my chest and the way the silence fell when he finally appeared. I still sleep with the light on. Always. Because when I think back to that night, I can't shake the feeling that I wasn't just seeing shadows. I was seeing something else entirely, something that didn't want to be seen, but slipped up for just a second. And that second was enough to change the way I sleep forever. Story 5. I used to work K-9 security for years, and while I wouldn't call myself a believer in ghosts or the supernatural, there are a few moments from that job that have stayed with me longer than I'd like. One of them happened on a site I patrolled regularly, and even after all this time, I still feel uneasy thinking about it. The site was an old historical farmhouse tucked away far from the main road. To even reach it, you had to walk nearly a kilometer down this narrow dirt road, more like a forgotten path than anything a car could use anymore. Woods stretched thick and dark on either side of the trail, crowding in close, and whenever I patrolled it at night, it felt like walking into a tunnel. People in the town used to whisper that the place was haunted, that strange things happened there after dark. I never put much stock into that kind of talk, but when you're out there in the middle of nowhere, with only your dog for company, even little things can start to play tricks on your head. One night, it was darker than usual. I can't remember if it was because the clouds had swallowed the moon, or if there just wasn't one out, but everything around me was pitch black beyond the small cone of my flashlight. About two-thirds of the way down the trail, I noticed my dog, Brew, start to act strangely. Brew was a large, steady German shepherd who'd been my partner long enough that I trusted his instincts completely. Usually, he trotted calmly at my side, ears relaxed, tongue lolling. But that night, his body went rigid on the leash. I could feel the tension running through him like a live wire. His ears twitched at noises I couldn't hear, and a low rumble built in his throat with every other step. I'd worked with him long enough to know when he was serious, and this wasn't a false alarm. Something had his attention. As we moved deeper down the road, Bruce suddenly surged a few steps ahead, pulling the leash tight. He never did that unless he felt a direct threat. He held about 2 meters in front of me, his body low, growling steadily into the dark. My flashlight beam swung across the trees, but all I could see were branches and shadows. The woods were silent except for Brew's growl and the crunch of my boots. That silence hit me harder than noise would have. I realized then that there were no insects, no night birds, not even the sound of wind moving through the trees. It was dead quiet, as though the whole place was holding its breath. 100 meters or so later, Brew stopped dead. His growl deepened, louder now, his hackles standing tall along his back. He was staring hard into the darkness, refusing to move. I followed the direction of his gaze with my flashlight, sweeping slowly left to right. At first I saw nothing. Then just for a moment, I caught the reflection of eyes. Then more. 6 sets in total, glinting back at me in the beam. They were low to the ground, wide-spaced, glowing faintly yellow in the light. I told myself they had to be coyotes, maybe a pack moving together. That would have been the most logical explanation, but something about it felt wrong. The eyes didn't blink. They didn't scatter or shy away from the light like animals usually do. They just stayed there, locked onto us, unmoving. And then, this is the part that still makes me shudder. Brew, who had faced down aggressive dogs, wild animals, and even the occasional drunk trying to swing at him, began to back up. He never retreated, not once in all the years I'd worked with him. But this time, his body lowered, his tail tucked, and he tugged back toward the car. That shook me more than anything else could have. If Brew thought it was bad, I wasn't about to second guess him. I kept the flashlight trained on the eyes, but as we backed up, I noticed they seemed to move too, slowly, keeping pace with us in the tree line. Always the same number, never breaking apart, always watching. I tried to listen for movement, branches snapping, leaves rustling, anything to tell me they were real animals. But there was nothing. Just the sound of Brew's paws scuffing the dirt as he pulled us back. By the time we reached the edge of the woods near the car, I finally dared to flick the light back one last time. The eyes were gone. Just like that. No sound, no trace, no movement. It was as if they'd never been there. Brew jumped into the back seat without hesitation, panting heavily, still tense. I sat in the driver's seat for a long time before starting the report. In the end, I logged the patrol as clear. What else was I supposed to write? 6 glowing eyes that might have been coyotes, or might have been something else entirely, had followed us out of the woods. No supervisor would have taken that seriously. Even now, I tell myself, it must have been coyotes. A logical explanation. But I've worked night shifts for a long time, been around plenty of wild animals, and I've never seen anything like that before or since. The way the forest went silent, the way Brew reacted, and those unmoving eyes. Sometimes I wonder if I walked into something that night I wasn't supposed to see. Story 6. I don't know if this really counts since it didn't happen while I was at work, but I figured I'd share it anyway, because it still sticks with me years later. Back when I was a teenager, I went through what we used to call our TAPS phase. For anyone not familiar, that was basically when we'd binge all those ghost hunting shows, especially Ghost Hunters, and then try to copy them ourselves in abandoned buildings, cemeteries, or any place rumored to be haunted. It sounds dumb now, but at the time, it was just what my friends and I did for fun. The thing is, I had always heard warnings from older people in my family, the type who still believed in spirits and omens, that if you messed around with that stuff too much, something could follow you home. I brushed it off, of course, thinking they were just being dramatic, but I would always remember those warnings in the back of my mind whenever something strange happened. There was this one night that stands out in particular. We used to hang out near this old spot that people in town called the Gates of Hell. Supposedly, it was just an overgrown entrance to some ruins, but it carried all the usual ghost stories, cult activity, strange lights, people hearing screams at night. I had even once met an actual TAPS investigator, one of those guys from the show, when he was traveling through. He told me something that freaked me out way more than the legends of the gates. He said that the cemetery right by my neighborhood gave him the strongest paranormal readings he'd ever picked up. That was wild to me, because that cemetery was practically in my backyard, the place we used to go all the time, just to scare ourselves. Hearing that from a guy who did this stuff professionally made me pause, but being young and dumb, it didn't stop me from going there anyway. For a while, it was just little things that happened, weird noises when no one else was around, cold spots that would make your breath fog in the air, even in the summer, shadows moving at the corner of your eye when you were sure you were alone. Creepy stuff, yeah. But nothing that ever went further than unsettling me for a moment. I figured it was just my mind playing tricks because I wanted to be scared. But then there was one night where something happened that I still can't explain, no matter how much I try to rationalize it. I was at home, asleep in my bed, when I suddenly woke up because something hit me on the head. At first, I assumed something must have fallen from my headboard, a book maybe, or my phone. I remember feeling something still on my head, so I reached up to brush it away. That's when I realized it wasn't an object. It felt like a hand, a cold, clammy, lifeless hand gripping the top of my skull. Not like when someone touches you in your sleep and you startle awake. It had weight, texture, the unmistakable feel of skin against skin, except it was ice cold, almost damp. I panicked and threw it off me as hard as I could, and when it hit the floor, I swear I heard a thud, as if something solid had landed there. Before I could even process what was happening, everything blurred together. I don't even know how to describe it properly. One second, I was lying flat on my back in bed, and the next, I was standing by my light switch across the room with my hand already reaching for it. There was no getting out of bed, no crossing the floor. I just went from point A to point B in one impossible motion, like I had teleported. The second the light clicked on, the fear hit me all at once. My heart was racing so hard it felt like it might burst. The room looked exactly the same, nothing out of place, no sign of whatever had grabbed me. But my bed was still warm, like I had just been lying there a second ago, and I couldn't shake the sound of that heavy thud from my ears. For weeks after, I kept trying to rationalize it. Maybe I'd been dreaming and woke up in the middle of it, my brain stitching pieces together in a way that felt real but wasn't. Sleep paralysis, maybe? Although I'd never experienced it before or since. Some people I told suggested it was just my nerves after all the ghost hunting crap we used to do. My imagination feeding off of my fears. That explanation made sense on paper, but it didn't explain the physical sensations. The icy grip of that hand, the distinct thud when I threw it off, or the way my body seemed to move without my control. Even now, I don't know if what I experienced was paranormal or if there's some scientific reason behind it. I've heard stories of lucid dreaming and out-of-body experiences that sound kind of similar. But when I think back to all the warnings I'd brushed off, that something might follow me home if I kept messing around in that cemetery, I can't help but wonder if that's exactly what happened. Maybe something decided to remind me that it was real, that I wasn't just playing games in the dark. I never went back to that cemetery again after that night, and the worst part is, sometimes, when I wake up in the middle of the night, I swear I can still feel the faint pressure of a hand on my head, just enough to make me wonder if it ever really left. Story 7. I used to work night shifts in a museum that was housed inside an old building downtown. The place had a long and complicated history. It had once been a vaudeville theater, later turned into a used car dealership, then abandoned for years until it was finally bought and remodeled into the museum. Even with all the renovations, you could still feel the age of the building pressing in from the walls, the echoes of everything it had once been. Although some events remain inexplicable, despite my efforts to understand them, the strange experiences didn't come all at once. At first, it was just small things you could shrug off. Doors that had been locked suddenly standing open in the morning. Displays that were slightly disturbed when we knew for a fact they'd been in order the night before. It was easy to chalk it up to human error. After all, everyone makes mistakes, and when you've been closing down a museum at night, walking around, shutting doors, turning off lights, securing the exhibits, it's easy to forget whether you actually did something or just thought you did. But the longer I worked there, the more I started to realize that it wasn't just forgetfulness or sloppy work. I was careful, meticulous even, and yet clothes from exhibits would be strewn across the floor, items knocked over, and drawers left open that had been shut just hours earlier. At night, while finishing up in the lobby after closing, I often heard loud footsteps running across the second floor of the museum. The kind of sound that made you stop whatever you were doing and listen, holding your breath because you knew for sure you weren't alone. But the reality was, I was alone. The doors were locked. The visitors were gone. I would check the floor above, and every single time it was empty. That sound became such a regular thing that I almost grew used to it. But there was never a point where it didn't send a chill down my spine. What made it worse was the elevator. It seemed to have a mind of its own. More nights than I care to count, I'd be shutting down. The building silent and still, the elevator would suddenly whir to life. I could hear it moving between floors, dinging as it arrived at each level, the doors opening and closing with no one inside. Sure, it could have been electrical issues or some kind of wiring malfunction, but when you're standing alone in a darkened museum and you hear that elevator moving by itself, it's hard to feel logical about it. I can't shake the unease. I would sometimes catch myself staring at the empty elevator car, half expecting something or someone to step out. All these little incidents built up to an atmosphere of constant tension. Even the air in the place felt heavy at times, as though I was being watched. I'd find myself walking faster down the halls, trying not to glance over my shoulder, telling myself I was being ridiculous but unable to shake the instinct that I wasn't entirely alone. And then there was the night when everything escalated. It's the one memory I still struggle with the most, because if it had only been me, I could have dismissed it as exhaustion, or a trick of the light, or just my mind playing games with me. But I wasn't alone that night, at least that's what I thought. I was on the second floor landing, right at the bottom of the stairs that led up to the third floor. The museum had been closed for about half an hour, and I was just standing there talking to my friend on the phone, going over closing tasks before locking up. The elevator was to the side, and the hallway was completely empty. That's when it happened. Out of nowhere, a little boy in a bright red shirt came running around the corner where the elevator was, his small footsteps echoing against the walls. He didn't even look at me. He just ran full speed up the stairs to the third floor and disappeared from view. For a second, I froze. It was such a normal sight, just a kid running, that my brain tried to process it logically. I thought maybe somehow, against all odds, a visitor had been left behind. That would have been bad enough, but at least it was an explanation. But the timing didn't make sense. The doors had been locked for a good 30 minutes, and the third floor only had one entrance and one exit. If someone was up there, I should have seen them or heard them before. I went upstairs, moving slowly and calling out as I checked. But when I reached the third floor, it was completely empty. There was no child in a red shirt, no sound of footsteps, nothing at all. After that night, every unexplained noise, every open door, every elevator ding took on a new weight. It stopped being easy to brush things off as electrical issues or forgetfulness. Whenever something strange happened after that, I'd just say that it must have been the boy in the red shirt. It became a kind of shorthand for all the unexplainable things that seemed to live in that building with me. And even now, years later, when I think about that night, I can't shake the image of him, small, fast, and impossibly out of place, running up those stairs to nowhere. Story 8. This happened years ago, and what still unsettles me most is that it didn't even happen at night. It was late afternoon, sliding toward evening, but the sun was still up when I first felt like something wasn't right. Back then, I worked at this small community building, part office, part recreation center, part gathering hall. I was one of the last people there most days, since part of my job was staying late to clean up after everyone left. Nothing special, vacuuming the carpet, wiping down counters, hauling out trash. Simple, quiet, predictable work. Normally, I didn't mind it. The silence after a busy day could even be calming. Everyone's voices and footsteps would fade. The last cars would pull out of the parking lot, and I'd be left alone with the steady hum of the vacuum cleaner. But some evenings when the building was completely empty, the silence wasn't comforting at all. It was heavy, too heavy, like the walls were listening. On that particular day, I remember standing in the main hall with the vacuum. The machine was roaring along when I thought I heard something faint under the noise. I turned it off, and in the stillness that followed, I could swear I'd heard water running somewhere down the hall. I brushed it off. Maybe a faucet had been left slightly open. It wasn't the first time. I went back to vacuuming. Not even 5 minutes later, just as I was finishing the row of carpet, I heard the distinct sound of a toilet flushing. Not once, but clear as day. The rushing water, the pipes groaning a little as it all drained. It startled me because I was supposed to be completely alone in the building. Everyone had signed out. I even locked the front doors behind the last group before heading back in. At first, I tried to rationalize it. Old pipes, maybe, or water pressure. I convinced myself I was being ridiculous. Still, I set the vacuum aside and walked down to the bathrooms just to check. The air in the hallway felt oddly cooler, like I'd walked into a draft, though there were no windows open. I pushed the bathroom door open and looked around. Nothing. The stalls were empty, no sign of anyone. I even checked the sinks, dry. I told myself it was just plumbing quirks. Old buildings make noise. That explanation was good enough until I walked back to the main area, picked up the vacuum again, and it happened a second time. The toilet flushed, followed immediately by the unmistakable squeak of the sink tap turning on. And this time, the sound of water running went on longer, like someone was actually standing there, washing their hands. Every hair on my neck stood up. I froze by the vacuum cleaner, straining to hear footsteps following the sound, but there was nothing. No door creak, no shuffle, just silence after the water stopped. Against every ounce of better judgment, I walked back to that bathroom again. When I pushed the door open, the lights flickered slightly, just for a second, then steadied, and once again, empty. The mirrors reflected only me. The stalls were all open. The sinks were bone dry. That's when the unease tipped into something darker. I didn't feel alone anymore. The air was heavy, and the smell of faint, stale bleach lingered too strongly, as though someone had just cleaned minutes ago. I remember standing there longer than I should have, staring at those mirrors, half expecting to see a shadow moving behind me. I finally forced myself out, locked the bathroom door just to make myself feel better, and went back to the main hall. The rest of the night was unnerving. I couldn't concentrate. I kept hearing subtle noises, like a door hinge creaking somewhere down the hall, or the faintest scuff of shoes on tile. Once I even thought I saw movement at the very far end of the hallway, as though someone darted quickly out of view. But each time I checked, there was no one. I tried to rationalize what I heard. After all, creaking beams and noisy pipes are common in old houses, and sometimes a quiet atmosphere can play tricks on your mind. My explanations gave me comfort, at least until the final unsettling event that happened just before I moved out. I'd finished vacuuming and was just gathering the trash bags to take outside. As I walked past the bathroom door, the one I'd locked earlier, I heard it flush again. This time I froze in place. I hadn't unlocked it. There was no possible way anyone could have gotten inside without me seeing. But not only did it flush, the sink turned on, water rushing full force, as though someone was defiantly making themselves known. I stood there, heart hammering, staring at that closed, locked door. The water stopped on its own after a few seconds, but I couldn't bring myself to open it again. I just grabbed my stuff and got out of the building as fast as I could. The next day, when I came back, I checked that same bathroom first thing in the morning. Nothing was out of place. Nothing explained it. Nobody else had keys but the staff, and none of them had been there with me. The pipes? Maybe. A glitch with the plumbing system? Possibly. But that doesn't explain why it happened right after I locked the door myself. To this day, I don't know if it was just quirks of an old building, or if I wasn't as alone in there as I thought. But I'll say this. After that night, every single time I stayed late to clean, I made sure to keep my music playing in headphones, just loud enough to drown out any toilets flushing on their own. Story 9. I used to work security at a youth detention camp that had been shut down, and to this day, I swear it was one of the eeriest places I've ever had to spend time in. The whole place was laid out like a prison, which already gave it a heavy, oppressive atmosphere. The perimeter was wrapped in barbed wire fencing, and the only way in or out was through these big double gates that could only be unlocked from the control booth. I'd come in for the evening shift, 3 to 11 p.m., and most of the time, I'd be the only one on the property. My post was in the control room, which was just a small enclosed space with one solid steel door. Thick, heavy, and impossible to open unless I buzzed it from the inside. That room became my little world for 8 hours at a time. I'd usually set up my laptop, throw on a movie, and just count the hours until I could go home. But the building itself never let me relax completely. Even when nothing was happening, there was something about that camp that kept you tense, like the walls were holding on to something they weren't ready to let go of. It didn't take long before I started noticing things that didn't add up. On more than one occasion, I'd hear the unmistakable sound of someone trying the steel door to the control room. The only problem was there was no way anyone could have been trying to get in. Nobody else had access, and the lock system was completely electronic. Still, every so often, the handle would rattle as if someone was pulling at it, testing it, waiting for me to give them access. I'd pause whatever I was watching, listening hard, and the sound would stop as quickly as it started. It always left me sitting there in silence, staring at that door, telling myself it was probably the building settling, or maybe even the wind pushing against the frame. But deep down, I knew it didn't sound like that. It sounded like a hand on the handle. There was another night I was half zoned out, watching Clerks on my laptop, when I heard one of the hallway doors swing open. The sound was sharp and echoing, exactly like a heavy door being pushed off its frame. I jumped up to check, and just as I reached the hall, I caught a glimpse of the door slowly closing on its own. Then, clear as day, I heard a man's voice call out. It wasn't loud, but it carried enough to make my stomach twist. It was just one word, something that sounded like a greeting or someone trying to get my attention. My first reaction was to freeze. I didn't want to walk down that hallway. I didn't want to look too closely at the door. I ended up just backing into the control room, shutting the steel door tight behind me and pretending I hadn't heard it at all. I tried convincing myself it must have been the building echoing, or maybe even the film playing on my laptop messing with my head, but it hadn't come from the speakers. I knew that for sure. The strangest thing, though, the one moment that still bothers me to this day, happened a few weeks into the job. I was halfway through my shift, scrolling mindlessly and sipping on coffee, when I heard the sound of something heavy being rolled across the floor. At first, I thought it was one of the janitors coming in, but then I remembered nobody worked there anymore. The sound was distinct, though, the squeak of wheels and the faint slosh of water shifting in a bucket. It echoed down the hall as if someone was pushing a mop bucket across the tiles. I sat there for a minute, debating whether to ignore it, but curiosity got the better of me. When I stepped out into the hallway, everything was silent. Nothing was out of place. I waited for a moment, convinced the sound would start again, but it didn't. I walked back to the control room, sat down and tried to laugh it off, but it didn't end there. A few nights later, I heard it again, the same rolling, squeaking sound. This time, I followed it further down the hall, trying to catch the source. My pulse was racing, and I kept telling myself it had to be a pipe creaking or something mechanical shifting in the building. When I finally reached the end of the hall, I froze. Sitting right in the middle of the floor was a mop bucket, perfectly placed as if someone had wheeled it there deliberately. The mop was standing upright inside it, but both the bucket and mop were bone dry. No water, no dampness, nothing to suggest they had been used at all. And the part that made my skin crawl, I knew for a fact the bucket hadn't been there at the start of my shift. That hall had been completely empty when I did my walkthrough. I stood there staring at it for a long time, not sure whether to move it or just leave it where it was. Finally, I just backed away slowly, telling myself I'd imagined it, even though every part of me knew I hadn't. I never touched the bucket, and the next night when I came in, it was gone. Nobody ever mentioned moving it, and honestly, I didn't want to ask. I wasn't the only one who noticed weird stuff there either. Some guards mentioned hearing strange sounds, soft voices, light footsteps, a sudden cold. But I didn't ask for more, choosing to stay unsure instead of finding out the truth. That place isn't a detention camp anymore. They converted the grounds into a medical marijuana manufacturing plant, which I guess is a much lighter energy than what it used to be. Still, every time I drive past the area, I get this uneasy feeling in my chest, like the building itself remembers. I can't say for sure what I experienced. Maybe it was stress. Maybe my brain was playing tricks on me in an empty building that carried too much history. But when I think about the steel door rattling, the voice calling down the hall, and that dry mop bucket sitting in the middle of the corridor, like someone left it there for me to find, I can't shake the feeling that there was something in that camp that didn't leave when the kids did. And maybe it never will. Story 10. When I was still in high school, I picked up a part-time job at a Tim Hortons near my neighborhood. Nothing glamorous, just the usual gig most teenagers around here had at some point. Because I was one of the youngest on the crew and desperate for hours, I often got saddled with the early morning baking shifts. The store didn't open to customers until 5 in the morning, but someone had to be there by 4 to start baking the donuts, muffins, and everything else. That someone, more often than not, was me. At first, I didn't mind it too much. The streets were quiet at that hour, and walking into the store in the dark with the smell of coffee grounds and sugar lingering in the air gave a weird kind of peace. Most people were still asleep, and for an hour it was just me and the machines, the hum of ovens, the clatter of trays, and the predictable rhythm of my own routine. Looking back, though, there was something unsettling about that silence, almost too still, as though the building itself was holding its breath. One particular Saturday morning stands out in my memory like a scar I can't rub out. I clocked in at 4 sharp, tied on my apron, and started with the muffins. Everything was normal until about 20 minutes in, when something shifted. It started with the background noise. The radio that usually played faintly from the kitchen speakers just stopped. Not a static buzz, not a cutout from bad reception, just a sudden dead silence. At the exact same moment, the television in the front lobby turned itself off. That in itself was weird, but I figured maybe there was some power issue. I went back to arranging the trays when the lights overhead began to flicker. At first, it was just a single pulse, bright, then dim, then steady again. But then it kept happening, rapid bursts that threw the kitchen in and out of shadows. The fluorescence made everything look unnatural, like I was standing inside an old horror movie reel. My first thought was that the building's wiring had gone bad. But then I realized something that made my stomach drop. The ovens never shut off. I checked them, half expecting the timers to have failed, but they were still glowing.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hot, humming along as though nothing else was happening. Same with the freezers and mixers. Every piece of heavy machinery in the store was perfectly fine. If it had been a power surge, shouldn't they have gone off too? By now, the lights weren't just flickering. They were strobing. 10 seconds of dark, 5 seconds of blinding white, over and over, until the kitchen felt like it was pulsing around me. The air grew heavier, colder somehow, even though the ovens were running full blast. I remember pausing and holding my breath, trying to listen for something, anything, that might explain it. That's when I realized how utterly quiet everything was. The hum of the ventilation fans, the faint buzz of electricity that fills every store. Gone. It was like standing in a vacuum. Then came the sound. Not loud, not obvious, but in the silence it stood out like nails on glass. A faint scratching, like something dragging itself against metal. It wasn't coming from the ovens or the mixers, and it definitely wasn't outside. It was inside the kitchen with me. The longer I stood there, the clearer it became. Almost like footsteps, slow and deliberate, pacing along the back wall where the storage room was. Every hair on my neck stood up, and I swear I could feel the weight of someone's presence pressing against me from behind. I wanted to convince myself it was just the building settling, or maybe rodents in the walls. But the timing of it all felt too precise. The silence, the flickering, the way the lights seemed to react in rhythm with the faint scratching. I tried to push through it, telling myself not to be an idiot. But when the lights all cut out completely for what felt like a full minute, my chest locked tight. I couldn't even see my own hands in front of me. All I had was the red glow of the oven timer in the distance, casting the faintest outline of the kitchen in crimson shadows. Then the light snapped back on, brighter than before, almost painfully so. The scratching stopped instantly, as though whatever was making it had been caught in the act. And just like that, everything returned to normal. The fans whirred back on, the radio picked up its soft pop music, the TV out front came back to life, and the overhead lights held steady. Nothing seemed broken. The machines were fine. It was like nothing had happened at all, except for the fact that I was shaking so badly I could hardly hold the tray in my hands. When my manager came in a couple of hours later, I blurted the whole thing out before I could even think to hold it back. He didn't laugh, but he gave me that look older people give when they think a kid's just being jumpy. He humored me, though, and we went back to check the security cameras. I half hoped something would show up on the footage, something solid I could point to as proof that it wasn't all in my head. I watched the tape from this morning. The lights flickered just like I remembered. The footage only showed me in the kitchen, glancing up with worry. There was nothing else caught on camera. No movement in the shadows, no dark figures, no strange anomalies. Just me, screaming once when the lights had cut out for too long, then going back to my work when they steadied again. No sign of the sounds I'd heard, no trace of the presence I'd felt. The manager shrugged it off as a glitch in the wiring, said maybe the cameras couldn't pick up sound well enough to capture what I was talking about. He tried to convince me it was nothing, just my imagination running wild that early in the morning. But even now, years later, I can still feel that heavy silence, that crawling sense that I wasn't alone in that kitchen. I've worked plenty of night shifts since, in different places, but I've never felt anything like that again. I don't know if it was a ghost, a power surge, or just my tired brain inventing monsters in the dark. But every time I pass a Tim Hortons late at night, I can't help but remember the flickering lights, the scratching in the walls, and the way the air felt like something was standing right behind me, watching. Thanks for watching. Don't leave before leaving a like to this video. Also hit the subscribe button to support my work. And as always, have a horrific nightmare, my dear.